This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. It's great to have you with us for the Friday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto. Right now, though, the second case of coronavirus in the U.S. reported right here in Chicago. Let's track the latest developments. Robert Langreth is joining us, a healthcare reporter at Bloomberg, based in New York. Robert, thank you for being with us. So what is the latest? What do we know here about this?
Well, you know, they have found a second case, and it's a traveler returned from the Wuhan area. She was in the area in China in late December, and she returned in mid-January. She had no symptoms as a woman in her 60s and started developing symptoms only after she came home. And when she called her doctor, she alerted the doctor that, you know, I'd been in Wuhan, and they quickly got her in isolation and isolated her, and, you know, she's doing okay. They don't think she had too many other contacts after she returned to the U.S. before she got sick, didn't go outside of her apartment much. So they're optimistic she didn't transmit it to anyone else here. They're obviously monitoring that. The CDC said today they're monitoring, you know, about 50 other different people around the country. They do expect to see additional cases of this virus, people becoming sick in the U.S., and there may be indeed be cases of person-to-person transmission. They say they are expecting some of that. There are likely to be more cases in the U.S., but so far the two cases we have had that are officially confirmed are people that came back from China and got it in China.
So, at least thus far, we're not hearing about cases where someone from China got it and spread it to someone here once they got back
to
the U.S.
Correct. Exactly. That hasn't happened, hasn't been confirmed yet. Now, there are a number of people, you know, this does, you know, look a lot like the flu. So there are a lot of people they are monitoring right now. I know at least another 50 people. So and a bunch of those have already turned up negative for the test. The CDC is really racing to get this test out to all the state health departments, because one of the bottlenecks is they have a test for this new China virus, but it's only at the CDC. So there's like delays in getting the samples there. If every state health department has a test, and it could be done much more quickly.
And I'm looking here, 800 cases at least, about 25 deaths. I guess they're trying to figure out how deadly is this if someone gets treated right away, but they may not even know that yet.
Yeah, we're literally finding out, you know, information by the minute here. Like, literally, the CDC got us a call today, a late morning, and said the incubation period. They thought the incubation period was about 14 days. And, like, minutes later, the Chinese scientists posted a major medical journal, you know, saying, you know, some studies of patients in China saying it's more like 3 to 6 days. So, literally, we're finding out information, you know, from the minute by minute, hour by hour. But it definitely can be spread, you know, person to person. There are definitely some, you know, a fair number of, you know, fairly severe cases in China, and some of the case clusters that have been officially reported now in the scientific literature, they're talking about, you know, 30% getting severe cases. And there's also the possibility in one of the cases that was reported in China that there may be some, you know, asymptomatic cases or with minimal symptoms. And that, strangely enough, is a worry because you get people that are spreading it and nobody knows.
Yeah, and you don't find out until later. Yeah. Thank you for all the latest details. Robert Langreth is a healthcare reporter at Bloomberg News in New York. Let's talk about the effort to contain the deadly coronavirus and its impact on travel all across the globe. Joe Schwederman is joining us, professor of public services, director of the Chaddick Institute at DePaul. Joe, obviously want to get into travel and the coronavirus. Before that, though, since we have you on the line, we have this ground stop at Midway because of all this fog. Just touch on why they do that, and it seems like that's going to create a huge bottleneck.
Yeah, well, fortunately, it hasn't blown up in anything too terrible. We are seeing, you know, 20, 30-minute delays pretty consistently at Midway. And, you know, Midway's got the short runways. Visibility is a little more difficult with the airport so hemmed in. So they play it a little safer on Midway when you have fog. And fortunately, by 12:30, it's due to lift, so we should get some relief.
Yeah, well, then, you know, luckily we just have a bunch of snow. So
can't wait.
It'll be a fun travel weekend. So we've been obviously covering this case here in Chicago, a 60-year-old woman officially diagnosed with coronavirus. This has to make some people at least travel leery, especially if they're heading to China.
you know, this is spooking the airlines, and right now people are making decisions about summer travel, and people often say, well, who's going to change their plans over one in a million chance? But we don't know where this is going, and people have a lot of different options when they decide what to press that purchase button. You know, they can easily go to the Caribbean. So the airlines are spooked right now. We're seeing stock prices fall. It's really hard to find out exactly how chaotic things are in the middle of China, but they've shut down a lot of travel services to prevent, you know, people from the Wuhan province from traveling around. So we're just we're at the beginning of this, and hopefully it doesn't get too much worse.
Does this, I guess maybe, is this different because this province is not, it's not like this is going on in Beijing. I mean, it's several hours south of Beijing. Most people who would be heading to China are not going to be going there.
Yeah, that's right. I think the China today versus China 20 years ago is quite different, where there's pretty sophisticated planning there with checks at rail stations. There's quarantines in certain areas. There's symptoms checking randomly at air facilities. So they appear to be on top of this pretty well, but it's such a gigantic city, 11 million people. And, of course, the virus has made it out of China, and we had that case in the U.S. And, you know, for the airlines, it's hard to unpack what the Boeing MAX problems and, you know, this new coronavirus, what's causing airline stocks to fall, but clearly it's not a good week.
So if you are someone who, you mentioned travelers changing plans, if you're someone who wants to do that in light of what's going on, are the airlines pretty flexible in working with you?
You know, right now the airlines haven't done any sort of large-scale reaching out to customers about rebooking and so forth. I think we're going to see this weekend probably a few more details. And I don't think mostly people that are going to Hong Kong and Beijing and Shanghai, you know, are really going to be encouraged to switch their trips. This is not a China-wide problem at this point. So I do think summer travel mostly is going to hold up well. But this is just one of those things that's going to cause, you know, modest declines in traffic across the Pacific, and that's not what the airlines need right now.
Thanks so much for the analysis, Joe Schwederman, professor of public services, director of the Chaddick Institute at DePaul. Just ahead, looking at how the health system handles these kind of outbreaks and also how they get the message out.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The public health system, locally, statewide, and nationally, in the spotlight because of the coronavirus. Let's talk about getting the word out. Bruce Japsen, Chicago-based health writer for Forbes. Bruce, how does the health community get the word out?
Well, the health community gets the word out like they do just about anything by having people pay attention, but they need to pay attention to the right news sources and listen to what the centers of disease control said. So people shouldn't first be getting alarmed with this because we have, 800 or so infections, and we have not, if you think about that, we have about 630 some people who die of heart disease every day. Okay, so let's put this into perspective that we have had viruses and we have had things that happened before, and the United States public health system is well prepared to help out this. Now, I can say what has happened in the past. So we don't know, you know, how serious this is and whether it's going to be, you know, we have the case of an infection in Illinois now. So, of course, you know, there's a 4-alarm, 5-alarm fire with the local television news. I'm sure tonight will be a complete freak show. But I would say pay attention closely to what the public health officials say. In the past, they have told people, so, hey, if we don't know what this is, virus is, you know, people should have their flu shots. You know, people should, you know, wash their hands. People should do all sorts of things that they normally do to maintain their health. That's usually what people will say. And there are, and also seek out credible sources on this. You know, read health reporters. You know, no offense to the local television news, but, you know, they don't have, like, epidemiologists on staff and so forth. So the Centers for Disease Control, CDC.gov, they track the regular flu. They will track this. They say the risk to a contamination in the United States is very low. So, but of course, it's something to keep an eye on. But historically, we've had, you know, bird flus and we've had swine flus and we've had other things. And people, the public health officials and the public health system, you know, nationally and locally, they keep on top of this. And the good news is we're better prepared for it than we used to be. I mean, it used to be that you couldn't even get a regular flu shot from your local drugstore. You had to go to the doctor's office. You had to go somewhere. Now they waived all sorts of rules way back in the George W. Bush administration that allow your local pharmacist to administer, you know, vaccines and medicines that they didn't used to be able to. So if there is some kind of outbreak, which we are by no means there yet, you have some rather uncredible news outlets that are talking about a pandemic. We are not even close to that yet. So people should pay attention to credible news sources with credible people.
Thanks so much for the insight, Bruce Japsen, Chicago-based healthcare writer for Forbes. You can hear Bruce's reports on health Monday evenings and Saturday mornings here on News Radio. Still ahead, Entrepreneur Friday, using the space on trucks for advertising. Good afternoon, I'm Cisco Cotto. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. A case of the deadly coronavirus is identified in Chicago. We'll have the latest next. We'll also discuss the potential impact of the outbreak on the oil market. Entrepreneur Friday, we meet the head of a local company that's using technology to utilize the space on trucks for advertisements and better understand the roads. On Wall Street, the Dow down 184 points, the NASDAQ is down 75, and the S&P is down 29. Oil today is down 2.5%. Lots of clouds in Chicagoland, temperatures in the mid-30s. 1 to 6 inches of snow on the way in the late night and overnight and tomorrow. That's when that's going to be happening. Again, 1 to 6 inches of snow. Right now, 36 degrees in Chicagoland. The latest on these falling markets in moments. Right now, though, we want to bring you an update on our breaking news. The confirmation that a woman in Chicago has tested positive for the coronavirus. It's triggered a health emergency in China. WBBM's Lisa Fielding joins us live now at the anchor desk with the story.
Cisco authorities say the woman in her 60s called doctors after she started to develop symptoms following a trip last month to Wuhan, China, which has been the center of the coronavirus outbreak. She's in the hospital now, though that's mostly to reduce the potential for spreading the disease. Dr. Allison Arwadi from the Chicago Department of Public Health worked to reassure people about how the case is being handled.
Chicago has been building its public health preparedness systems for years, and we have a solid response plan in place. There is no need for the general public to change their behavior in any way based on this news.
This is also the day that health workers are set to begin screening people coming into O'Hare International Airport on flights from China. The first flight from Shanghai landed about 90 minutes ago. We posted a lot of information about coronavirus on our website, WBBMNewsRadio.com. Live at the Anchor Desk, Lisa Fielding, News Radio, 105.9 FM.
The Noon Business Hour is presented by Republic Bank of Chicago. The markets are falling. Let's find out what's going on. Scott Kays is joining us, president of Kays Financial Advisory in Atlanta. Scott, as you've been looking at what's going on Wall Street, what do you see today?
Well, you know, it's interesting. The futures started up this morning. Looked like it was going to be a good day today. And I think what spooked the market was this discovery of another case of the coronavirus here in America and continues to spread in China. I think that is starting to become more of a concern to the markets, and that kind of put the depressing mood today in the market.
And is a lot of that just because of the unknown? We don't know how much it's going to spread, where it may spread, all of that.
You know, that's interesting because the one thing the market hates is uncertainty. And I think people are hesitant to do too much selling because the overall economic situation is good. But you got to pay attention to something like this. I mean, hopefully it doesn't turn into a major outbreak. But with that potential there, if that happened, obviously, other than just the humanitarian part of it, the economic part could be very bad as well. And you got to pay attention to it.
Given the fact that there's so much unknown, what is an investor to do? How do you respond, or do you just sort of ignore this and move forward?
Well, if you look at what has happened when you've had things like this in the past, say with SARS, and other outbreaks, you do see a temporary market decline, but then the market tends to rebound pretty quickly. We respond maybe a little bit different to uncertainty than a lot of other people. The market tends to discount for the worst. I don't believe in doing that because typically you'll have a snapback reaction and you miss it if you got out because of fear of the downside. I think you just continue what you've been doing, continue the program. Like I said, the economy is looking solid. I think we're on pace for probably 2% growth this year. and will probably accelerate as the year progresses. Stats are indicating that the global economy, the global economic slowdown is stabilizing, probably bottoming. And I think as the year progresses, the global economy picks up. That's obviously going to be good for the U.S. economy.
And as you've been seeing in earnings season, as the results have been coming in, are you seeing anything in either the earnings or the forward guidance that might change your mind on how you think the economy is going to continue doing?
No, not so far. I mean, the banks came in across the board. The large banks came in very positive, most of them beating expectations pretty handily. That's a good economic indicator because you're talking about loan growth there and general business conditions. Intel obviously came out with a stunning report today and has been up big on the news. I think Intel is a great sign, not just of a cycle that's turning. But let's face it, I mean, the future is in the Internet of Things. The future is in automation, artificial intelligence. Where we are headed, the demand for chips is going to be absolutely massive. And no, I don't see anything so far that causes me to pause with what we're thinking.
Yeah, you mentioned Intel. I mean, this is sort of a surprise in this earnings report.
You know, it was. I'm not sure people really thought the cycle had turned this much already. Not so much in actual numbers yet, even though their numbers were extremely good. I think this is just the beginning, though. I think people have been waiting just to see that positive sign. I mean, like I said, the future demand is obvious, and people know that it's coming, and it's just been a matter of when do we start to see those green shoots coming out in the numbers. And this was a pretty powerful report. I think it bodes very well for the technology sector in general.
So the advice to investors, given the fact that you expect continued growth, you expect continued strength in the markets, do you leave any money off the table? Do you move anything maybe over into some dividend stocks or something like that? Or are equities strong enough you're gonna put them in the growth stocks? You're really looking to win.
Well, I mean, I think you need a balanced portfolio. We tend to be longer-term investors. We're not going to take big bets on any given sectors. But, no, we're not going to try and time things and put money in bonds and wait and put it back in stocks. You know, value stocks look attractive to us. Again, like I said, the financials look extremely attractive to us. Growth looks very attractive. I think you're going to continue to see the growth in the technology sector do very well. So to us, yeah, I would stay with the stock market and keep a pretty good balance between growth and value. I think they're both going to do well.
All right, good insight. Thanks so much. Scott Kays, president of Kays Financial Advisory in Atlanta. Up next, Entrepreneur Friday, the merging of tech and trucks.
Money Talks, as the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Entrepreneur Friday on the Noon Business Hour, and this afternoon the focus is on a Chicago company. It's using cameras, machine learning, and artificial intelligence to place advertising on semis. We welcome Dan Salganik, president of Komoot here in Chicago. Dan, it's really good to have you on the show. Let's begin by just telling our listeners what you do.
Hey, guys. Yeah, thank you very much for having me back here, actually. So Komoot, in short, is really a machine learning and tech-enabled advertising platform that utilizes the back and the sides of trailers to understand the road better, right? So we use the back and sides as billboards for companies to advertise. But the big differentiator of what we're doing is we're using machine learning and AI to understand basically the analytics of the road. And that's something that a lot of companies really haven't been able to come up with or be able to utilize in their marketing campaigns.
So you have a twofer here, right? So you have the advertising, and obviously companies value that. But it sounds like when you talk about looking at the roads, I mean, are you looking at driver habits, behaviors, that sort of thing?
Yeah, a little bit of everything. To launch, we're actually looking at types of vehicles. Something very important for marketers is actually the number of impressions and the impression time, which is basically CPM, cost per, milli, which is cost per impression. And so what we're trying to do is we want to analyze to a much more granular ability to understand, from an out-of-home marketing, which are billboards, bus ads, et cetera, who's looking at my ad, for how long are they looking at my ad, and is there really a return on investment on that ad? So you're absolutely right. The advertising is one part, the analytics is the other.
Is there any other medium where you can do it that specifically, where you can get that sort of data on who's looking, how long they're looking, that sort of thing?
There is, and it's called digital, you know, and that's the big thing. I come from a digital world, and that's why when we launched this business, I said we can't be another billboard company. We have to be a data company. The billboard is almost secondary. So what our goal is to basically create the technology that we're seeing when we're utilizing something like Facebook ads or Google ads or any of these other platforms, but in the physical world. And it's hard because the physical world is called one-to-many, but we want to understand that one-to-one or one-to few interaction.
Now, you got to understand, drivers are going to get a little freaked out about this. You know, hey, there's cameras and they're looking at me, but I'm assuming you're figuring out how to address that concern.
Definitely. So all of the data that we're using is 100% anonymized. We're pulling away any type of video footage of people or anything that would basically compromise, people's privacy. So that's 100% not the intent of the business. Really, our goal is to understand, to put it really simply, how Waze utilized driver habits to make maps better. We're trying to understand the physical world, similar to how Waze tried to understand the driver and route world.
So is this going to be on the backs of trucks? Because here's what I'm thinking. I mean, you have that space that drivers are staring at the whole time that they're stuck in traffic.
Yeah, so we have two options. We have the full trailer, which is kind of, you know, the vanity one. But the back of the truck is what I kind of call the filet mignon, right? It's a small piece, but it's the most valuable. And you're absolutely right. You know, my thought around this is I'm staring at trucks, and I'm actually glad the traffic report was right before this, because I'm staring at trucks for, you know, a minute, 2 minutes, 5 minutes. Whereas when there's a billboard, it's in my peripherals, and if I'm staring at it for more than a few seconds, you know, I'm going to crash. Yet the truck in the back is in front of me for a long period of time when I'm sitting in traffic.
And so the data that people are going to get, is it simply how long someone's looking? You're mentioning the impressions, or is there at some point going to be a way to maybe personalize this at all based on the type of drivers in a particular area or something like that?
So as of now, it's not only how long and how many, but we're actually able to use a bunch of demographic information based on the areas and the zip codes, because everything is GPS enabled. So we're able to understand the types of people who are on the road, kind of cross check that with the types of cars, because we are able to get the make, models, years of those types of cars, and then create smart inferences through the machine learning algorithms. This is a little bit, you know, in the future, because we are indeed a startup, but that plus phone IDs in the area will allow us to have a really good scope on, you know, who's driving where, when and where are they driving, and then geofencing those areas. But to your point, unfortunately, we do not want to get into the digital space just quite yet, because, you know, moving pictures on a semi-trailer going 45 miles per hour is probably a little bit of a legal issue.
right. Yeah, right, exactly. You want to be careful with that. Really interesting. Appreciate it very much. Appreciate hearing about your company. That is Dan Salganik. He is president of Komoot, and that is based here in Chicago. He's our Friday entrepreneur. Still to come, how the coronavirus could impact what you pay at the gas pump.
Information to make cash and save cash. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
There is movement in the oil market. Is it because of concerns about the coronavirus? Let's find out what's going on. Phil Flynn is joining us, senior market analyst at Price Group, also a Fox Business News contributor. Phil, we mentioned moments ago, oil down again today, about 2.5%. It's back in the $54 range. Does this have to do with coronavirus?
It absolutely does. You know, in fact, if you look at what's going on in the markets, the oil complex and the oil markets, the heating oil, the distillate fuels, it really is ground zero when it comes to the market impact from this virus. Because a lot of what's happening with this virus and its impact on the economy is speculation at this point, but we know for a fact that it's already impacting oil demand. The reason why I say that, Cisco, is because you get all of these major cities that are shutting down airports, shutting down trains, planes, automobiles, you name it. Those are hundreds of thousands of barrels of oil, diesel, and gasoline that aren't going to be used that we expected to be used. And if that doesn't happen, that means more supply, and that's why the market's under so much pressure.
Now, you also have the situation with Iran that appears to have stabilized. Is that at all playing into this?
It really is. I mean, there's no doubt that we've seen some real heightened geopolitical risk in the recent weeks. It seems like it's calmed down. It seems like after the attack, after Iran hit us back after killing General Soleimani, that things have calmed down, that they're ready to stand down. And so we see some stability on the geopolitical risk front. But having said that, you know, we still have a lot of tensions in Libya and other places. So it's not totally off the table, but it's definitely receded. But really the focus today, I mean, we got a fairly very strong demand number from the Department of Energy yesterday. In fact, demand almost hit an all-time record high for the United States for all energy products. And we're down. And we're down mainly because of the fears of the demand destruction coming out of China and fears that it could spread.
So let's talk about what's gone on here, really, for oil companies. That little blip there where oil rose, does that really help them, or is it so short-term it doesn't really do much?
I think it did help them, but now, you know, the recovery that looked like it was in place for the energy sector may get kicked down the road a little bit. And I wish I could tell you how far down the road. The answer is we don't know. If we see, you know, more cities get quarantined, if we see people start to be fearful to travel, you know, we're going to see a significant drop in energy demand, maybe the most in history. I do know that when we saw the SARS virus back in 2003, you know, the price of oil fell 20%, you know, and it was kind of a similar situation. Oil prices were going up because the economy was recovering. We're almost at $40 a barrel. After the SARS virus hit, demand dropped, oil prices fell 20%, and it took almost a year for oil prices and oil companies to recover from that big demand hit.
Again, oil back in the $54 range today. Thank you so much. Phil Flynn, Senior Market Analyst at Price Group. Past programs later today, a podcast of the Noon Business Hour at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the Radio.com app.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly.